The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
Now, this week, the Irish Childhood Bereavement Network is holding National Bereaved Children's Awareness Week, which aims to highlight that just like adults, children grieve too. Now, joining me to talk about his experience in coping as a solo parent and what has worked for his children after his wife's tragic death is a founder and managing director of Fifth Story, John Fitzsimons. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, tell me how your circumstances evolved. Your wife became ill and ultimately, it proved terminal.
Yeah, I met Gráinne in 2003, and we formed a beautiful relationship. We subsequently got married 3 years later, but shortly after I met Gráinne, she was diagnosed with melanoma at the time, so skin cancer at the time. But thankfully, over the 10 years of our marriage, we had a pretty normal existence. We had two children, Ella and Jack, a girl and a boy. And but then in the summer of 2016, the disease really took hold and it started to spread. And just 4 days before Christmas in 2016, she died.
Did you know that ultimately it could be terminal? Because we're always told that malignant melanomas, if you get them early, maybe something can be done. If not, and then recently we've heard about these miracle drugs that are used to treat very expensively melanoma.
Yeah, melanoma is a really difficult disease to fight. And I think, you know, Gráinne did have an extended life, getting 10 years from diagnosis beats a lot of the statistics that are out there. And she did have access, thankfully, to pretty much all the drugs that are available over the period. So we were very fortunate, but I suppose, you know, Google is our friend these days, and you know, you can't help but researching the actual data on these diseases, and it did become clear that, you know, this was a terminal condition she had, and that in the last 6 months, I mean, we were in France on our summer holiday in July, and on the night before we came home, she had one glass of wine, literally one glass of wine, and the next morning we were in the car park in the airport, and she was hunkered in the corner getting sick, you know, and I really knew that what was coming there was her, you know, it had spread to her liver. I'm no doctor, far from it, but yeah. I knew at that point, and then it spread, you know, from the liver onwards and onwards over the next 6 months, and it's just savage.
Now, your children are quite young, but had you prepared them that this, you know, that mammy might not be around forever?
Yeah, so it's a very difficult scenario. I mean, you know, I got wonderful advice along the way, and still getting lots of advice, which I'm really here to share. And one of the best things I was told is to keep them in the loop, which, you know, is great advice, but it's easier in theory than in action, because Gráinne, of course, really, you know, didn't want to die. She didn't want to say goodbye to her kids. So to be keeping them in the loop in the months and weeks preceding her death, you know, was an incredibly difficult thing for us both to do. But we did, and we found ways to keep them in the loop. And, you know, I remember the day after she died at 5 o'clock in the evening, and I was advised not to go rush home and tell the kids. They were being minded by my brother, but to wait till the next morning, you know, because they probably wouldn't sleep that night. And I remember sitting in my daughter's bedroom the next morning and, you know, telling them those, you know, immortal words of, you know, last night your mummy died. And, you know, there was no anger, tantrums, you know, they were kept in the loop up until that point. They knew that this was going to happen. And, you know, it actually turned out to be a really loving moment between the three of us.
Very difficult to do in your own grief, having to think of the kids and how to be as kind but realistic for them as possible. How old were they when
they were 4 and 6? Yeah, I mean, it's been really, really tough, you know, for everybody. I mean, grief is really tough. I was so naive about death because I'd never experienced it before Gráinne, and I felt like in the months preceding it that it was a car crash waiting to happen. It was a slow motion car crash. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the moment of impact, if you like, was the moment of pain. But actually, I now know that, you know, the pain really just starts at that stage. Yeah. And it really, you know, okay, it gets easier, but it really stays with you. And so, yeah, and it's really, you know, tough, to be quite frank, solo parenting two kids when you're grieving and they're grieving. Yeah. And kids, you know, I've yet to meet a parent that says raising young kids is easy, you know, so it's tough for everybody.
In the last weeks and months of her life, was the care she got exemplary?
It was. I mean, we were incredibly fortunate. And I know, you know, the HSE gets a lot of stick and there's a lot of controversies. But, you know, Grainne was, you know, minded in Beaumont and in the last month in the hospice in Harold's Cross. And she was very fortunate to stay in the new wing. There's a beautiful new wing there. And literally she had everything she could have wished for. I mean, no one, of course, wanted her to die. But if this was the way to go, it was actually one of the better ways to do
was
that.
Was it pain-free?
Pain-free. She had access to physio. Like, she even had a masseuse come in one day, which I remember she took very fondly towards. You know, she really had the full service in the hospice, which was wonderful. And they were so good to the kids as well. You know, they had kids' toys in her room. The kids loved coming in and just playing on the floor while, you know, I was chatting to her. So it was... Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a horrific experience and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Yeah. But as it was to happen, it was a beautiful, you know, release for her as well.
Now, the children, they always say children are so resilient. You know, they, after a couple of weeks, couple of months, they shake it all off. That would be a misunderstanding.
Yeah, I think kids, like adults, are similar in some ways in terms of they like to be kept in the loop, you know, and I have kept them in the loop. And, you know, recently we've been arranging Grainne's gravestone and, you know, I went with their pick, not mine. It's their mother, you know. So, and, you know, I think that's a hugely important part of it. But yeah, I mean, you know, and it's really important to speak clearly to kids about what's going on because, you know, it's different from adults because, you know, we talk about passed away, you know, kids don't understand that, you know, they've fallen asleep, you know, and you need to be very clear in the language.
That mommy will not be coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when they actually hear that clearly, they move on. You know, kids are great because they live in the now. You know, I don't know, somewhere in their development, we start to worry about the future and kind of, you know, dwell on the past, you know, and actually, you know, all the mindfulness would tell us we should be focused on the now. So, you know, of course, their mummy having died is part of their now, but they're very focused on the now and what's happening, you know, now.
Now, obviously, while Grainne was becoming more ill all the time, that the things that mammies do, she was less able to do and wasn't as present as she might have been. But still, when she has finally died, there's a massive vacuum.
Yeah, well, Grainne was a very strong lady and she made sure that I was doing at least 50% of everything. So it wasn't a huge, well, it was a huge step up for me, but it could have been bigger, I suppose, if it was a more traditional marriage back in the day. But yeah, and I'm very fortunate to have amazing family. I'm one of six in my family. Grainne came from one from five and, you know, we're all very close and I've loads of friends as well that support and, you know, it would be very difficult to really deal with all this without all the support. But it's a wonderful opportunity as well. I mean, Pat, I can plait hairs. I'm learning French plaits at the moment. This morning I had to do a side plait for my daughter going to school. So, you know, I see it as a beautiful thing that I probably would never have. I'll have a very unique bond, you know, my kids that...
But still, it's tough. I mean, with two people, it's tough.
It's really tough, you know, and, you know, a lot of parents, I know it from myself in the first few years, you know, you do the good cop, bad cop. I'm the good cop and the bad cop. And, you know, for all the support I have, you know, we come home, collect the kids, come home and the dinner and, you know, in that evening, it's me and the two kids and they're tired and I'm probably tired. And, you know, there's dinner to be made, there's homework to be done. They have to go to bed.
And then you're on your own.
I'm on my own. And then I come down, I sit on the couch and, you know, the loneliness is crushing, to be honest with you. It's so tough because, you know, when you're married, you deal with all these challenges that are thrown at you together and you've someone just to bounce them off. You've someone to talk to them about. You know, when they come down that stairs, I'm on my own, you know, and I'm not going to be ringing my male friends going, I had a bad day. Can we chat about it? You know, I don't know, maybe I should be, but I don't.
But even parental decisions, you know, you'd always be having a discussion, robust or otherwise, about what was the right thing to do about schooling or homework or anything that might be happening in school. And you just have to sort it out, muddle through yourself.
Yeah, sort it out yourself. Yeah, now I do have loads of support and I would use them, you know, for that in all those big decisions. And, you know, Alan and Jack are very fortunate. They have loads of cousins as well. So there's a lot of my siblings and Grainne's family are going through similar ages with the similar challenges. So I am lucky to have lots of people to bounce them off.
What about bereavement counselling for yourself or for the children?
Yeah, well, one thing I've learned is, Pat, accept all help that's, you know, thrown your way, whether it be an invite to dinner or whatever, you know, if someone to take the kids out on a Saturday afternoon to give you a break. And, you know, I didn't think I'd be going to counselling as a 40 something year old man, but I've been in counselling for the last 2 years and going back to the point of dealing with everything on my own, I'm very fortunate still to be seeing a counsellor in the hospice. And there, you know, that's the mechanism through which I deal with those bigger issues with the kids. You know, I'd come into those sessions, God love my poor counsellor, with 3, 4, or 5 things that I'm, you know, struggling with, and I'd air them, and, you know, we'd work them through. So, counselling is, I think, really important, and I'd really encourage people in similar circumstances, you know, to put the ego and the pride to one side. You know, well, there's nothing wrong with it anyway these days. I think people nearly brag about going to counsellors these days, but it's been hugely beneficial to me. And, you know, I do all this stuff for me, for the kids, because if I'm that little bit happier, and, you know, grieving is incredibly energy draining. I've had sadness around me for the last 2 years. If I can lighten that load slightly for me, I know I'm a better parent for the kids.
Yeah. And have the kids gone to counselling? Or
The kids went to a session in ARC Cancer Support before Gráinne died to kind of prepare them, which was really wonderful because they were with lots of other kids who were in similar circumstances. So it normalised them. And then they did a child bereavement weekend last year in the hospice, which again was great. But like the kids are doing fine. They don't, you know, the general consensus is they don't need counselling because they're doing fine.
Do they ever give out to you and say, if Mammy was here, you know, it would be different. I would be allowed to do this. I would be allowed to do that. Normally, of course, the dads are the lenient ones.
Yeah, well.
And mummies crack the whip.
I'm good, I'm bad.
Yeah. But you have to be both. But, I mean, do they evoke her memory in that way?
No, they don't. I mean, they're actually incredibly kind. And, you know, kids are incredibly perceptive. I mean, they really are. I mean, they know that I'm hurting, suffering. I mean, my kids, you know, every couple of weeks they'll go downstairs at the weekend and they'll make me breakfast in bed. Don't tell social services, but they're down there frying eggs at the age of six and eight, you know, and bringing them up to me in bed, you know, and they know that they need to give as much as I give them, you know, double, if not treble, the love that they got. They need to love me that bit more and take care of me, you know, because they're worried as well about me, you know, and that's one of the other things is separation anxiety. I remember in the early days, you know, I used to travel with work and Jack would be asking me, like, what happens if the plane falls out of the sky, you know, and I'd cut, you know, my hand playing. I fell off the bike once and he was asking me, you know, am I going to die? And so their view, unfortunately, of the world is distorted, which is really sad. But then again, you know, nearly 2 years in, I mean, that's subsiding because they have a better view of it now, a more balanced view.
You're clearly still grieving, but do you ever think you could love again? Something you rule out completely?
Well, the really hard part is the loneliness, you know. And, you know, I struggled with this earlier on in the year because I said, why can't I be happy on my own? But, you know, there's a wonderful South African proverb, people are people because of people. And I think I will in time be happier with somebody. So I it's hard to see it now, but I'm open.
Someday. The last time you were in here was on a completely different mission entirely. You were involved with Kamara, the recycling computers for schools in Africa and places like that. You've had to leave that because of your parental responsibilities now, but you're not idle.
I'm not idle. No, I had to leave, all right, because I was out in Africa a couple of times a year and over and back to the UK. And that's, you know, one of the complexities of my circumstances. I can't. Someone has to collect those kids, you know, and put them to bed every evening. And it was time for a fresh challenge for me. But yeah, no, I just set up a new venture called Fifth Story, which is working with businesses to, I suppose, to put social good at their core. So a lot of businesses do the, you know, the CSR, the corporate social responsibility thing, write a check for the local charity. But I'm saying, actually, if you put social good at your core, and some of the big companies are doing this, like Unilever, for example, they're actually performing significantly better financially by having social good at the core, because customers are now aware of, you know, the ethics of companies. And if they're actually genuinely socially good, they'll buy more from them. And also staff. I mean, you know, here people don't want to work for just a salary anymore. They want purpose. They want to, you know, be part of something bigger. So, yeah, it's really exciting venture for me.
And how does Fifth Story work? How does it interact with companies?
Well, it's coaching and consulting. So it's about engaging with the senior leaders in the organization and looking at what they could do that's part of their core business, but do it for social good as well as for financial. Yeah. When they do.
And it's quite clear that a lot of ordinary staff members, workers in those companies, because they're always doing things like doing runs for charity, doing this for charity, there is an appetite in the workforce to be involved?
There is. I mean, and people, you know, people, even the hardest nosed business person you'll meet, I mean, they actually, you know, they genuinely care. They care about, you know, their community, they care about the world. And you're given an opportunity to do better, you know, for the company to do better and for them to do significantly better social, you know, invariably they're very open to that.